Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people. And their essential love of justice.
Hi, welcome to the Kudzu Vine. Welcome, Tim.
Good evening, sir.
Yes, we've got a big show. We've had a big week in politics this past weekend, and we have a big one shaping up. So we're going to do a little review and a little preview. We're going to talk a lot about North Carolina tonight. We've got two special guests, Mike Davis, a political consultant from North Carolina, and Tom Jensen, one of our friends from public policy polling. And
sounds
so
good.
A lot of stuff there. But then we're going to sprinkle in a little Georgia, a little Mississippi talk. I guess that's one of the things I want to talk about soon. But then I do know that one of the big events in Georgia politics every year is your Chattooga County JJ Dinner, and that's coming up this Saturday. So, Tim, give us the details.
Okay, Dave, thanks a lot. This will be our 12th annual dinner. We've had some of the big folks in politics in Georgia, and for the second time joining us this year will be Labor Commissioner Michael Thurman. If you would like to come to the dinner, you can contact us through ChattoogaDems.com. We look forward to seeing everybody there in Somerville next Saturday night at 7 o'clock.
Yes, and for folks that don't realize, I mean, Chattooga is a county of, what, 30,000 folks. Is that right, Tim?
25,000, yes.
25,000. But the JJ Dinner is such a big event for the number of people that live in the county. I mean, there, if you put the population of the county up against the attendance and what goes on there, it's probably one of the finest in the state. I mean,
I appreciate that.
You look at it that way, you know, one of those pound for pound kind of things, as they say in sports. And the facility, the room is just really well lit. Sometimes you go to these dinners, it's so dark, and Tim's room is very well lit. I enjoy that. The food's always excellent. It's such an affordable price. And then a lot of the statewide candidates at different times will come. Now, this year we don't have as many statewide races, but you'll go and you'll see, I think before Mark Taylor became lieutenant governor, he came. Just to be recognized. I'm sure we can keep going down, but always show up at this.
Our first speaker was State Representative Roy Barnes, who no one had ever heard of, Dave.
Yes, and so I've already been hearing that there may be some Senate candidates there possibly, wanting information. So it should be a good deal. I think we have our first caller on with us. Our first guest, Mike Davis. Mike, are you there with us? Well, I think there came unmuted. Mike?
Yes, hello.
Welcome. This is Mike Davis, political consultant extraordinaire from North Carolina. Wanted to have Mike on to fill us in on all the happenings in North Carolina. And, Mike, it's you're on also with Tim Shiflett, as well as myself, David McLaughlin. But we have North Carolina coming up, and that's probably maybe the biggest state in the presidential calendar still left, and then of course you have one of the fullest slates of any state in the nation this year in your own state.
That's right. This is the year where we have a full ballot, both in the primary next Tuesday week, and of course in the general election in November.
Yes, and so I guess we'll start at the top of the ticket. What are things looking like in the primary race right now for the Democrats?
Well, at the top of the ticket for president, it would appear, if it depends on how much you want to believe in polls, because you see a lot of them, that Barack Obama is in pretty good shape. He's listed as being up by anywhere from 15 to 22 points. What the final total will be, I'm not sure. Both Clinton and Obama campaigns have been running pretty aggressive campaigns here, something that we haven't seen in this state in terms of presidential politics in a long, long time, and thought we were going to get left out this time. But they are here. They have surrogates. The candidates themselves are here. Both are on TV. So it's pretty exciting.
Yes, and I guess talking about North Carolina, another southern state, which do you think it's going to end up being like? Is it going to end up being more like Georgia, in which Obama has the lead in the poll and it expands even further? Is it going to be more like Texas where he has a little slight lead and it goes down to where it's either a loss on the regular election, and then, of course, he kind of mitigated that with the other part of the process? Which does it fall with the polls?
I try not to guess too much on those kinds of things, David. It is really hard to say at this point. We're happy to have an active campaign going on. It's going to be a huge turnout. We've already voted through Friday. Already voted over 120,000 in the Democratic primary for on our early vote on our one stop. And that doesn't count Saturday or today. So it's going to be a huge vote.
Yes, and I'm sure that'll affect other races. So other than talking about how it may affect other races, I guess we'll move on off of the presidential ballot. Y'all are a unique state in that you have your gubernatorial elections the same year as your presidential election, which a lot of states use it as the other even year cycle. What's that race looking like? I believe it's a competitive primary on both sides. Mike? Mike, did you hear my question about the governor's race? Not sure. It's showing that Mike is still with us. He's what have you.
David, you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Sorry about that. I lost you. Must be the North Carolina telephone connection.
I don't know, but we were talking about the governor's race, and it's a competitive primary on both sides. What's that looking like? I guess you can start off with the Republican side.
Well, on the Republican side, we've got four candidates. Pat McCrory is the current mayor of Charlotte. Got into the race very, very late. The other three, Senator Fred Smith, former Supreme Court Justice Bob Orr, and activist, I guess you'd call him, Bill Graham, have been campaigning for well over a year. McCrory got in after the first of the year and is leading most polls. Most pundits think that it'll more than likely be a second primary. In North Carolina, you must receive in the primary at least one vote over 40%. Or there's a possibility of a second primary. Most people think it'll be McCrory and Fred Smith in that second primary.
Okay, and then on the Democratic side, it seems like there's more than two candidates, but there's the top two candidates, and then there's the rest of the field.
Man, we've got a race here. Lieutenant Governor Bev Perdue, two-term Lieutenant Governor, running odds-on favorite going into 2008 to probably a lot of people thought was just sweep this away. Those of us who know Richard Moore, who's a state treasurer for two terms, didn't think that was going to happen, and it's a Donnybrook. They both have been going after each other on the internet, on TV, personally, and a lot of us just hope that whoever does win this thing will be able to bring everybody together on the Democratic side for the general election.
Yes, and so that, I guess, is. Would you say that's getting the most attention of any of the statewide races is the governor's race?
Oh, yeah, no question about it. I was at a meeting a week before last, David, with folks that are professionals, engineers, and contractors and whatnot, and went around the table of 10. Everybody knew about the governor's race, of course. Only 2 out of the 10 people could name hardly any of the candidates for lieutenant governor or any of the other down-ballot races. So it's mostly about, right now, about the governor's race.
Yes, and then I have Tim Shiflett on here with us, one of our co-hosts. Tim, do you want to ask a cool question?
Yes, sir. I'd like to turn, if I could, to the U.S. Senate race. Now, to the outside observer, Liddy Dole would look a little vulnerable, and yet the polling I've seen shows that she appears to be fairly safe this year. Could you fill us in on that race?
Yeah, Senator Dole, who we don't see much of here down in North Carolina, we suggest that she ought to visit us occasionally. But Senator Dole really is one of the few candidates in this state that has acquired ROC status. And she has done very well when she ran last time and is expected to do well. We really, on the Democratic side, we're not able to get any of the high-profile candidates. Governor Mike Easley was urged to run. He did not run. Others were urged to run. They did not. So we have Senator Kay Hagan from up in the Piedmont section in Greensboro, and Jim Neal, who is a newcomer to politics in North Carolina. They are the two that are vying for the chance to run up against Senator Dole.
Okay, and I want to turn my attention back just for a moment to presidential politics up there, because I saw a poll out of North Carolina that showed a hypothetical matchup between Senator McCain and Senator Obama for November, and it was a statistical dead heat. Is that actually possible, or was that poll just an outlier?
As a Democrat, I'd like to say that's a real good possibility, but as an observer for over 35 years Democratic politics and here in North Carolina, that would be unlikely. But we think that either Clinton or Obama would be competitive in this state. Of course, we have to remember that our own Senator John Edwards last time, 4 years ago, was on the ballot and was unable to help John Kerry carry North Carolina. So this on presidential elections for many, many years has been a Republican state, and it's tough to break that.
Okay, thank you, sir. David?
Yes, I guess still staying with federal politics, what are the top congressional races as far as competitiveness in the state this year?
Well, in terms of the primary on May 6th, there really aren't any. The Congressman McHenry does have some push on the Republican side, but the rest of the of our seats, we have 13 congressional seats here in the state, and none of those will have any active, any real good races on May the 6th. Now, come general election, Heath Shuler will be fending off attacks on him up in the 11th district. You may remember that 2 years ago he defeated longtime incumbent Charles Taylor in one of the key races in the country. Shuler's done a good job, raised a lot of money, has been the conservative Democrat that he said he was going to be, and most of us think he will be in pretty good shape unless the presidential election goes to meltdown here.
Yes, and I guess there's a primary to see who gets to face him. Is there one candidate that's broken out of the pack?
Tell you the truth, I follow politics a lot, but I haven't followed that one particularly strongly, so I really don't know what's happening up there. There's three or four folks that are running for that race, but I'm not sure who's leading it.
Yes, and I take your word for it on nothing's competitive on the primary side, but I did see Walter Jones. He was a Republican that actually kind of spoke out in some fashion against the war, maybe not, you know, fully or anything, but just was skeptical of some things. And apparently he had gotten some criticism at the time in Republican quarters, but then the fact that he's not really getting any, his opponents are not getting any traction, what does that say?
Well, it says that Walter Jones is a venerable name in this state. His father served in Congress as a Democrat for many, many years, going back to the 60s. Walter has been outspoken, somewhat of a maverick in his own party. You know, he's the guy that came up with banning the word French fries and done a lot of us think a little few kooky things. But I think he's still in pretty good shape down in that eastern North Carolina district that he serves.
Yes. And I guess, looking, you said a lot of the down-ballot races have gotten a lot of traction. But, of course, because people are moving up to new races, there are a lot of competitive primaries. What are some of the ones that we should look for to see what's going to happen in the state?
Well, the key one, I guess, would be for Lieutenant Governor. Of course, Lieutenant Governor Beverly Perdue cannot serve. We have a two-term limitation in the state for governor and lieutenant governor, so she's trying to become governor. We have four candidates on the Democratic side: Senator Walter Dalton from up in the Piedmont, up in Rutherford County, Hampton Dellinger, who has been very active with Governor Mike Easley, both in the Attorney General's office and as governor. He's an attorney here. Pat Smathers, who is mayor of Canton, which is up near Asheville in that area of the state, west, and Dan Bessie, who is a well-known environmental leader from Orange County, home of Chapel Hill. So those four are going at it. Most folks would think that Senator Dalton and Dellinger are likely to be in a runoff. They are both on TV. Both have run professional, aggressive campaigns, but it'll probably be Dalton and Dellinger. On the lieutenant governor side, neither of these candidates, Jim Snyder, who has run for public office statewide before unsuccessfully, and Senator Robert Pittenger, who is from Charlotte, they have not had active campaigns outside of Republican activists, haven't seen any TV, very little on the Internet. So we're not sure. Frankly, I'd just have to say that would be a toss-up on where that falls.
Yes. Now, looking down ballot and even the governor's race and the U.S. Senate primary, how do you think the presidential race getting such turnout is going to affect those elections, especially elections where you have racial dynamics, gender dynamics among the candidates on the North Carolina races?
Well, I've been doing this, David, for a long time, and I've never, as a political consultant, never have had to deal with this, what we call both the presidential dynamic and the Obama factor. I have a couple of state legislative races where I have candidates running in majority-minority districts, and that, everything's turned upside down. We just don't know what's going to happen. We've had to do things, can't do things just like we've always done. The whole issue of Obama, you may have seen in the national press, hit it pretty hard last week when the state Republican Party here announced that they were going to start running, on this coming Tuesday, a 30-second ad attacking Reverend Wright, Senator Obama's former pastor, and making the link between his comments and sermons and then trying to put that on both Richard Moore and Beth Perdue, and a lot of back and forth on that. So that continues to be the biggest X factor, if you will, that I've ever seen in state politics here.
Yes, and what was the reaction in the state to that ad?
Well, as you would expect, the editorial writers have been shocked that the Republicans would do anything like this. Most of us that have had to deal with Jesse Helms and others through the years with these kinds of attacks, frankly, we're not particularly surprised. I'm not sure how that's going to play with the electorate. Probably not a whole lot in the Democratic side.
Yes. Well, I thank you for coming on, Mike. And obviously with North Carolina being such a big player in the political picture in the South this year, we want to have you back on closer to the general and what have you. Anything else you need to tell us before you leave?
I can't think of it. We're going to have, as we said, a very active May 6th here, lots of elections from the top to the bottom, and we'll be preparing for the general election. And we often on the governor's races and the Senate races here are often affected greatly by what happens at the top of the ticket at the presidential level. That certainly will be the case in 2008.
Yes. Well, good luck to all your candidates about 10 days from now, and look forward to having you again.
Thank you, David. Appreciate it.
You're welcome, sir. Yes. Well, Tim, that was very insightful, and we'll have a little more polling talk. Hopefully, Tom Jensen will have even other states besides North Carolina, but I know he has an incredibly full North Carolina poll that will help. Yes. I guess now it's time to turn a little bit of Georgia talk, because that's something we know best, I guess you'd say. One thing I was going to mention is early in this week, I saw a headline in the AJC. It said, State rocked by DOT scandal. Tim, how many people have talked to you about the DOT scandal out of the blue this week?
Exactly none to this point, David. This involves, of course, as all the political folks who listen to us know, this ongoing romance and conflict of interest and this and that, and I've had nobody talk to me about this, so I think it's a kind of a tempest in a teapot, don't you?
Well, Tim, you're explaining to the people they've been rocked by it, Tim. Come on. No, and actually, I do think it does show, you know, once again, just how inept the Republican leadership is in the state, and it is a big problem. I don't think that's my point, is that, you know, it's really not resonating with folks, and unfortunately, that's gonna hurt us.
But you just did hit on something the average voter does understand, and that's the fact that the Republicans who are running this state have not been doing that good of a job.
Yes, but that's what we got to do, is how do we pierce that filter to where people put all these pieces together. That's
well,
if you will.
People in my county understand it with the high unemployment rates, and people in the Atlanta area who experience the daily gridlock on the roads, they understand it. And people, some of our conservative listeners out there who were expecting big things in the way of tax cuts this year and ended up with nothing, by the very people they elected. They understand it too, David.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's a different, you know, thing going on there, and I'm just trying to see how much it's going to pierce the filter, if you will. But it's obviously been a big thing with the insiders. Now does it get the regular folks? I guess next week is qualifying in Georgia, and it's real interesting. We've already seen a few things happen this past week, and it'll be interesting to see what else we see happen. One development was Public Service Commission, a race where those races don't get a lot of attention, but usually they're kind of the harbinger of things to come. Well, the first statewide Republicans elected was a PSC commissioner. When the Republicans began to really take over the offices, they kind of took over all but one seat on the PSC. Now we have an open seat with Angela Spear, somebody that's not been singing from the song music of Stan Wise and other influential leaders that apparently just want to do the utilities bidding. She's resigning, and this is going to be an open seat. Tim, do you feel this seat is going to, what happens here is going to show, kind of be a harbinger to things to come? If it goes Democrat, does it start to show a swing? Or if it stays Republican, it says, you know, we still spend some more years in the wilderness?
Well, it not just swinging to one party or another. Watch to see if this thing is actually competitive. If it's competitive, then Democrats in Georgia know all of a sudden that open seats are back on the radar. And when the Democratic Party begins to reassert itself in Georgia, they're going to do it with open seats, David. That's what to watch for.
Yeah. And so that will be interesting to watch. And then that's one race, and I've actually heard some rumblings that Kurt Thompson, state senator, is looking at that. And that would be a candidate that's, you know, run campaigns, comes from a large county of Gwinnett, probably has the means to raise a respectable amount of money. And so that'll be interesting to see if he qualifies.
Well, don't you think a breakthrough candidate in a race like that would come from the metro area, from one of the great big counties, where he could run up a vote in his home county and maybe carry that over statewide?
Oh, it does make sense that would happen. I guess there's some more races coming up that are, I guess you will say, dominoes to fall. We saw that Bob Holmes is going to resign. Or not resign, he's going to not seek re-election. He's had, you know, nearly over 30 years in the legislature. Then a few places we've seen people that are going to step down or run for other races that are going to leave seats that are going to cause more things to happen. In Savannah, Regina Thomas has said she's going to run for Congress against John Barrow, and that's a top.
That's stunning. That's the most stunning development of the week to me. That district does have a large African-American population. That could get really interesting really fast.
Yes, and then you add to that the fact that when she leaves that race, then Lester Jackson is going to seek her seat, and he's currently in the state house. And then a past state representative, Mickey Stevens, is going to seek Lester Jackson's seat. So you're going to have one change leads to another, and that's in the southeastern part of Georgia. In the southwestern part, you have Michael Meyer von Bremen, who is not going to seek re-election, going to run for a judicial post. Freddie Powell Sims is going to move from the state house, and she's going to seek his state senate seat. And then one of the local officials is going to seek her seat, leaving another seat open. So you're seeing like a three domino chain. But then going back to that congressional race, yeah, that's really scary to think that we're going to spend some of our time on competitive primaries for incumbents that we hold. It just seems like a very, very unusual move. John Barrow has not been near as controversial, at least within the party, as Jim Marshall's been. It just does not seem like a positive development for us moving forward.
No, it's not. It's not. You recall how close Congressman Barrow's race was 2 years ago. This is still a top 10 race that the Republicans are targeting. They have got to just be licking their chops right now at the thought of a bloody primary. Right?
Or even the chance that somehow that they could knock off Congressman Barrow, which I think is rather unlikely. But if they could they somehow play into this race, get that done, to where then Regina Thomas would probably be a far easier.
Well, wouldn't be the first time there's been a big crossover vote in Georgia, would it?
No, and but like I said, I think it's very unlikely. Unfortunately, at this point, the Republicans don't seem to have as strong a candidate in that on the Republican side as they do with the, Colonel Goddard. I don't want to mess his rank up, but he's the military official that's running in the Middle Georgia district against Jim Marshall.
Well, it does seem interesting that maybe the most conservative Democratic congressman in the whole United States Congress is Congressman Marshall, and Republicans are making him target number one in Georgia instead of Barrow. I just find that a little bit odd, especially when they came within a few hundred votes of knocking Barrow off, but they seem to be throwing their big guns at Congressman Marshall this time, and I haven't quite figured that out. Have you?
I know one thing is on the northern part of Jim Marshall's district is an ex-urban area in which you're probably getting a few more Republican voters to move in, people moving into Pike, moving into Butts County, that kind of thing. The only problem with their theory is, and it showed with Congressman Marshall twice now and with Congressman Barrow once, places in which they were the incumbent in that area, they already served 2 years or served 4 years, they got stronger. They did outperformed the statewide ticket, and therefore, and they'll be incumbents to everywhere in their district this time, meaning that it's going to be much harder for the Republicans to gain inroads in either of those districts. I believe we have Tom Jensen on with us. Tom?
Good evening.
Welcome again, Tom.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, you're welcome. Polar extraordinaire from North Carolina and other states. I know last time we had you on, we talked about a different state's polling, and I know you were running polls in Pennsylvania and other places. What states are you polling that are still upcoming in the presidential race?
We're polling in both North Carolina and Indiana. We'll have new numbers out in each of those places, Monday, North Carolina, Tuesday, Indiana.
Okay, well, maybe you can preview some of those Indiana numbers, since on your site, if you go to publicpolicypolling.com, you can see a PDF from, I believe, the 21st on North Carolina, quite extensive, went all the way down the ballot on both sides. You know, very good reading for someone interested in North Carolina politics. Well, I guess kind of wrapping up, Pennsylvania was such a pivotal state, and you did some polling there. Kind of give us the postmortem and how things changed, seeing what your poll showed and what the results showed.
Well, we did a pretty bad job in Pennsylvania. We had a real good track record for this cycle until there, and we're kind of looking at what we did wrong and learning from some things that we can improve on for the future. But basically what happened there was we had seen record turnout from black voters and young voters in most all the primaries that had happened so far this cycle. And Pennsylvania had record black turnout and record young people turnout, but it had record turnout from everybody else, too. So there wasn't actually disproportionate black turnout and young people turnout. And we had been projecting that, so we showed Barack Obama doing a lot better than he actually ended up doing.
Yeah, so the people's opinions within the demographics didn't change. It was that your model was off based on what other states had been.
Yeah, in places like South Carolina and Georgia and even places like Ohio and Texas, black turnout as a percentage of the population had been much higher than you'd usually expect. I'm sure you all remember that black turnout in Georgia in particular was much higher than anybody expected, and almost all the pollsters underestimated Obama there. But Pennsylvania didn't see that trend, so we're doing our best to sort of figure out what's going to happen in North Carolina and Indiana.
Yes. Well, I guess moving to North Carolina, since that's your state you're based in, you've done more polling there. What are you seeing right now in North Carolina?
I'd be shocked if Barack Obama doesn't win by a significant double-digit margin in the state. He's basically going to win any state that has at least 30% of the Democratic electorate as African Americans, which is the case here. But we're also having record turnout on all of our college campuses and early voting. Something like 1,000 folks came out to the early voting site in Chapel Hill the first couple days it was open, and those are all UNC Chapel Hill students, and they're almost all voting for Obama. Our latest poll in the state showed Obama with a 25-point lead. I don't think he'll probably really end up winning by that much, but I think that he's pretty solid for a victory in the 15 to 20-point range in the state.
Yes, and so what perception-wise, what do you think that does to the race?
Well, I think that both candidates are actually going to end up focusing more energy on Indiana because North Carolina is so lopsided. I think the Clinton campaign knows it doesn't really have a chance. You know, Hillary was here on Friday, and they've sent Bill around a lot, but I think that's more damage control, trying to cut their losses than anything else. And Obama, too, has been doing some events in the state, but I'm sure you're probably going to end up seeing more of him in Indiana over the next couple weeks as well. Because both campaigns know that Obama's going to win here, but obviously if Obama can win in Indiana as well, that could be the knockout punch for Hillary. So I think that's going to end up being the bigger battleground for the May 6th primaries.
Yes. Speaking of perception now, of course, if Obama wins Indiana, that changes the race around to where he gets considerable momentum, could even be a closeout situation. Is there a number in which if Hillary gets within X number of points and wins Indiana by a decent handful, even though mathematically, you know, she doesn't have the delegates at that point, but it becomes such a momentum factor, what's the number she wants to close it down to?
She would need to get it down to single digits, I think, in North Carolina. I think that she needs to have a primary somewhere in the South where she shows that she can at least keep it competitive. And she did well in Tennessee, but you look at places like Georgia and South Carolina, she really got clobbered. So she needs to do well in a state that has a significant black population and at least keep it competitive. So I think the Clinton campaign would certainly take it as a major victory if they could keep it down to single digits in North Carolina.
Can she even splinter the state and do well in the eastern mountainous part of North Carolina and show how well she does there and point to that as anything?
Certainly for delegate purposes, she has some pockets of the state she can do real well in. She'll do well in the mountains in the western part of the state where there's a small black population. Other than that, though, she is going to have a hard time. Down east is an interesting combination of black voters and, I guess, more conservative white Democratic voters, folks who are registered Democrats because their daddy was, but a lot of the time vote Republican in federal elections. They still vote Democratic in state elections, which is why North Carolina still has a Democratic governor and both houses of the legislature controlled by Democrats. But certainly the Hillary is going to have to try to rack up some pretty large margins in the rural and more small town areas of the state, because Obama's going to win big time in all of our urban centers, as you might expect.
Yes, and the College Triangle there and what have you. Well, I guess now let's move over to Indiana before we move back down ballot in North Carolina. What are things looking like in Indiana?
We haven't actually done a full poll there yet, but the polling we've done this weekend is indicating a pretty close race in Indiana. I think that could definitely go either way. Among the polls that have come out from other companies over the last couple of weeks, I've seen two with Clinton in the lead and two with Obama in the lead. In all cases, it's a margin of less than 5 points. And one thing that I've noticed in the competing polls is that there's a big disparity between what some of the companies are projecting in terms of the age of the electorate. I saw one poll that had Obama up by 3 or 4 points, and they were actually guessing that over 50% of the voters would be under 45, which I think would be a younger electorate than we've seen in any other primary in the country so far. But it was done by a very good polling firm that I have a great deal of respect for, so I don't, they could be right. Then other companies that are showing an older electorate are showing more of a trend towards Clinton. So it's not a state with a large black population. I think we're going to see the black vote in that primary be 11 or 12%. So Obama's not getting that much help there. It is, however, an open primary, and Obama in a lot of states has benefited from the votes of Republicans and independents. So that's something that could really be a boost for him in Indiana. But I would expect that race is going to be close right down to the end.
Yes, and so the win is the win. It's not about margin there at this point.
No, nobody's going to be able to come out of there with a real resounding victory, I don't think.
Yes. Well, Tim, do you have any questions for Tom?
Well, asking a question about Indiana, would you find in your polling that state is a lot like, say, Ohio and Pennsylvania in its breakup of voters, or is it a little different?
Yeah, that's something that is real hard for us to gauge, because you look at states like Ohio and Pennsylvania, they skew a little older, they don't have large black populations, and Hillary Clinton won pretty resounding victories in those states. Then you look at a couple other Midwestern states, Wisconsin and Iowa, and they have the same relatively old demographics, electorate that's heavily white, and Obama dominated in both of those states. So I don't want to say we're totally flustered, but it is hard to figure out whether Indiana is going to be more like its neighbors to the east or more like its neighbors to the west.
Okay, and one more question. It's about North Carolina. It's something we mentioned a little earlier on the show. There is some polling out showing a hypothetical matchup between Senators Obama and McCain in November, and it is showing North Carolina as a statistical dead heat. Is it possible, based on what you're seeing, that state could be in play for the Democrats this fall?
I think it could definitely be in play. I think states like North Carolina and Virginia in particular, states that no matter who's the nominee, the Democrats really need to take it seriously. We need, as a party, to not write off the South. And I've been a little concerned by some of the comments that Senator Clinton's folks have made at various points you know, basically writing off Obama's victories in primaries in our region and saying that, you know, realistically these states aren't in play in the fall. We need to try to make these states in play in the fall. With the national political climate as it is this year, if we write off every southern state this year, it's basically you have to wonder when we're ever going to try to make some inroads in the South. And the Democratic Party is not going to be successful long term in national elections if it writes off an entire region. So I think that North Carolina definitely could be in play, more so with Obama as the nominee, but I don't think Senator Clinton should necessarily discount her own chances that much either. I think that if they put resources, North Carolina and Virginia, I think Democrats could legitimately win. I don't see Democrats legitimately being able to win a state like South Carolina or Georgia, but they need to put resources in there too, so that as the demography of the states change, the party remains more competitive.
Okay, thank you, Senator David.
Yes, I guess moving down into your extensive in-state poll in North Carolina, what's it looking like on the Republican side on both sides of the aisle?
In the Republican race for governor, we have five folks running, and the two front runners are Pat McCrory, who's the mayor of Charlotte. He's been the mayor there for over 12 years now, and Fred Smith, who's a state senator from the eastern part of the state. And McCrory has been the favorite in most of the polling. He's had a lead as high as about 12 points. Smith has really started attacking him in the last couple weeks, and it's down to 7. We're running our poll for this week right now, and it looks like it might even be a little closer. McCrory's going to continue to be in the lead, but Smith's whittling away at it. McCrory he's been able to stay the mayor of a Democratic city by towing a really moderate course. Smith's been a conservative fire breather in the legislature, and what's tightening the race is it took forever for Smith to start really attacking McCrory's record and trying to convince the GOP electorate that he was a liberal. He is doing that now. I'm wondering if it's too little too late, though, because McCrory had just really been able to solidify his lead, running real effective television advertisements without a whole lot of response. So On the Republican side, McCrory is definitely favored, although it is getting closer. On the Democratic side, I think we are becoming more and more clear that our Lieutenant Governor, Bev Perdue, is going to beat out State Treasurer Richard Moore for the Democratic nomination for governor. Perdue's led in the poll in the whole campaign. When both candidates started really running a lot of negative advertising in March, Moore made a huge charge and took away most of her lead. His negative campaigning was much more effective than hers. Then in early April, she just decided she was going to stop. She said she thought that it was really turning off the voters and she just wasn't going to run any more negative ads. And since then, her lead's gone right back up. She's showing a double-digit advantage. And the Moore campaign, I think, is getting really desperate. They had an event Friday criticizing Perdue for having some sort of stake in some stores in Georgia that sell hats with the Confederate flag on them. And he's also running an ad timer to the KKK. And I think that's actually really turning off voters in the state and helping Perdue get a bigger margin.
That does sound a little far-fetched that where you eat a steak has a hat in the gift shop. that sounds like it's hard to put together and follow. Well, I guess looking at the U.S. Senate race, I assume it's pretty clear that Elizabeth Thole would win her primary, but on the other side, it's a competitive primary for the Democratic nomination. What is that looking like?
We have five folks running for that as well, and two of them are serious candidates. One is Kay Hagan, who's a state senator, one of the more, I would say, powerful senators in the state. The other is Jim Neal, who's a successful businessman who grew up in North Carolina and moved back to the state about 2 years ago and decided to run. Hagan has the support, I wouldn't say officially, but certainly implicitly, of the DSCC in Washington, which has given her a lot more ability to raise money. Neal's run a real strong grassroots campaign, and they were real close to each other in the polls for a while, but Hagan's been running pretty intensive television advertising the last 2 or 3 weeks. It's really expanded her lead. Our last poll, I think, showed Hagan with a 35-8 advantage, so that race is definitely pushing in Hagan's direction. General election polling has shown Dole starting out with about a 12-14 point lead, which actually is really not that bad of news for Democrats in North Carolina, given that Hagan is not that well known. If folks really coalesce around her after she wins in the primary and she's able to raise a lot of money, I think that she could make that race against Dole this fall more competitive than might be expected.
Where is Elizabeth Dole in relation to 50%?
It's looking like 51-38, 52-39.
So what's real interesting over 50, which is an important number for an incumbent.
Yeah, what's real interesting is one of our colleges in the state, Elon, I guess it's a university now, Elon University did a poll a couple weeks ago that said that only 42% of voters in the state thought Dole deserved to be reelected. But then when you put her up against actual bodies, she does better. But that's definitely a sign that there are folks who are open to change, and it'll be up to the Democratic nominee to convince those voters that they're better than what they have now.
Yes, and so if they put nobody on the ballot, that might be the strongest candidate.
that's possible.
Yes. Now, one thing that is interesting, as you mentioned this, is that in North Carolina, it sounds like female candidates do quite well, and in other southern states, that's just not the case. What do you think? How do you think it is that female candidates do so much better in North Carolina politics?
Yeah, I think that it's mostly a product of the personalities involved in this particular election. Bev Perdue has just really shored up an incredible amount of support with the Democratic base over the last 8 years. One reason that Richard Moore's not having any success tying her to the KKK is that she has the support of 25 out of 27 black legislators, and they've gotten on TV and said that the stuff that's being said just isn't true. So she's done a real good job of establishing a political network. And then Hagan's just established herself as a master fundraiser. She has shown an ability to raise considerably more funds than any of the other candidates in the Democratic primary for Senate, which is allowing her to get her message out to the voters to a much greater extent than her opponents are. So I think it's just a product, I guess, mostly of there being several very strong female candidates, because this is the – we've never had a female be a nominee for governor before in the state. We've never even had a female run on the Democratic side that I can think of, and on the Republican side, they haven't been very viable. So this may well be the year of the woman in North Carolina politics.
Yes, and I guess going down ballot, there's a good many competitive races because seats have opened up with Bev Perdue and Richard Moore and other races. What are you seeing down ballot that's interesting?
We have a lieutenant governor's race where there's four real good candidates, and a lot of Democratic activists across the state wish those folks were running for governor instead of lieutenant governor, because they were so turned off when Moore and Perdue were being so negative in the governor's race that they wanted to vote for one of the lieutenant governor candidates. But I think it's going to come down to Walter Dalton, who's a state senator from the western part of the state, and Hampton Dellinger, who's a young progressive guy from the Triangle. His father used to be the Solicitor General for the United States, and he's been a real high-level person in several administrations. So that's what's going to be on the Democratic side, is a close race between Senator Dalton and Hampton Dellinger. On the Republican side, there's also four candidates running. Pretty clear as we get closer to the primary that the nominee there will be Robert Pittenger, who's a state senator from Charlotte. North Carolina has only actually elected a Republican lieutenant governor once in its history, but Pittenger is very independently wealthy and will be able to run a much stronger campaign for that office than Republicans have tended to. So folks certainly are going to be watching that this fall. Beyond the lieutenant governor's race, we have primaries, as you said, for for most of our statewide offices, but we're still showing 50 to 70% of voters undecided in all of those races, even just a week and a half before the election. So I'm real curious how people make up their minds who to vote for in races like that, where the candidates are not very well known and they don't have very much money to get their names out there. But I guess folks will win those races one way or the other come next Tuesday.
Yes, I mean, just looking for an example, a state auditor's race. You have Fred Akins at 16 and Beth Wood at 26. How do you think, for instance, the factor of Obama being on the ticket, how does that affect a race like that with 58% undecided, but yet Fred Akins, African-American candidate, Barack Obama, both white and African-American, both? How does that affect?
Yeah, I think one interesting thing the Obama dynamic is doing is it's bringing out a lot of voters who haven't paid any attention to any of the races other than the presidential race. We did an interesting analysis a few weeks ago where we showed that in those down ballot races, on average, 20% more of Obama supporters are undecided than Clinton supporters, which is an indication that Clinton is bringing out, you know, your pretty standard voters who, you know, follow politics pretty closely and are paying some attention to these races. And these Obama folks, on the other hand, a lot of the time haven't been paying very close attention. And, you know, one really big thing, I think candidates who have a strong presence at the polling places on election day are going to do really well, because you're just picking up voters who haven't paid any attention. And if you make a contact with them there when they're going in to vote, that's something that's likely to make a big difference. But the lack of money really hamstrings these people. I think, as you mentioned, Fred Akins is African-American, but we actually don't see Akins doing that much better with African-Americans than with white voters in our polling, and I think it's because, for the most part, African-American voters don't know that Akins is African-American because he's not running television ads, he's not sending out direct mail, so it, you know, it seems like it should be an advantage, but unless some of these African-American political groups that have endorsed other black candidates on the ballot really make a big effort to get their core supporters to know who to vote for in all of the races, there's just it's going to be hard to get that information out there.
Yes, and I guess that's maybe one of the things that's going to be done in the next 8 to 10 days.
Absolutely.
Yes. Well, Tom, very informative again. Enjoy having you on as a guest and look forward to having another opportunity with, as more polls come out.
Thanks, David. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Yes. Well, Tom was great again, and I want to get to your outrage of the week, but I did want to kind of follow up on one of our recurring stories. Travis Childers, who was a guest the other week, his election happened. He won by 3% over the Republican, first time the Democrat and the Republican have gone head-to-head in that special, but he only got 49%, which actually was still outstanding. He actually went from a one-point lead to a three-point win, but you need 50 in that race, and it's become the hottest race right now on the blog, Swing State Project, others, and so that race is looking good for the Democrats, and then of course, Don Cashew's election, guest last week, that will occur on Saturday. So we'll actually have the results next week. But, Tim, why don't you go ahead with the outrage of the week?
Okay, David, let's talk a little bit about Georgia. Well, the latest session of the Republican-led legislature, as you all know, has ended, and the fall campaign for legislative races has already begun. We've had a couple of these candidates already here on the kudzu vine. Now, it's a common practice for each party to send a list of talking points to supporters and candidates touting each party's accomplishments and plans for the future. If you go to Peach Pundit, you can download the Republican list written by Senator Eric Johnson, and what a crock you'll read. Number one on this list is absolutely called creating jobs. Well, I hate to be the spoil sport, but what jobs? Unemployment is increasing. There are no jobs being created. As I say this, I am sitting in the middle of a county with an unemployment rate of 14.5%. If Eric Johnson came to Chattooga County and told the folks here how many jobs the Republicans have created, he'd be laughed right out of this county. And you know what he went on to say? He said that in the next session, Republicans were going to aid job creation by addressing the transportation problem. Does he mean the way they addressed it this session? That bunch of Republicans couldn't agree on any plan. They can't agree on anything. Why are they suddenly going to do it next year? Then Johnson talked about all of the great Republican improvements in education. Has he looked at how we stack up against other states lately? Nobody did manage to complain about Georgia's teachers being the highest paid in the Southeast and about the money spent on students. And I'm so glad to hear from Eric Johnson that Republicans are strengthening Georgia's families. Now, guess how they're going to do that? Well, I'll just quote the senator on this one because this is really something. And I quote, "Restrict doctors from playing God, ban human cloning, and designer babies." So they're going to spend taxpayer money creating a law against something that presently does not exist. Only one group, I believe they're called CloneAid, has even claimed to have cloned humans, and this group says that space aliens showed them how. Now, here's an idea for Senator Johnson. Instead of chasing the boys from Brazil, how about really doing something for Georgia families, like fixing this economy that the Republicans wrecked? Oh, and they're reforming government. Is that what they call that comedy of errors in Atlanta? And he said our neighborhoods are safer? How? By allowing people to carry concealed weapons in practically every public place imaginable? Oh, yeah, nothing says safe neighborhoods better than folks packing heat in church pews. And there's tax reform, health care improvements, and, David, the Republicans are protecting our environment. As a matter of fact, Johnson tells us that we can, let me quote again, proceed with nuclear power expansion rather than relying on terrorists and thugs for our oil. Now, I have to take great exception to that last one. President Bush's family is in the oil business, and they're not terrorists and thugs. Well, at least they're not terrorists. What's the final word in this list? Eric Johnson tells us that, quote, Republicans represent real change. I hope Republican candidates all over Georgia run on this stuff right here. We'll elect a bunch of Democrats, and that will be change I can live with, David.
Oh, I can't wait to see the Drake Millers and the radio spots talking about stopping clone aid.
What is wrong with these guys?
Well, they have no record that's worth running on. You know, it's standard practice to talk about what you've done, but you could fit that on one of those mini post-it notes. You know, and still have room for a phone number too. It's just crazy.
Well, I just want everybody to go over to Peach Pundit and download this thing. I think it was from a post from the 24th. You'll find it. And you just won't believe some of this stuff you read.
Yes, we just have to have candidates in place that are well-trained. Well, I apologize to anybody if my voice was hoarse, but I spent all last night yelling for the Hawks and their outstanding win over the Celtics.
Amen.
In my crackling voice. But, Tim, I thought it was a solid show with a lot of information on North Carolina politics. And with Georgia doing their qualifying, we'll probably have a little more of a Georgia-focused show next week for the folks, because when you see those qualifying lists coming out, that's one of my favorite political weeks of the year.
And for those of us doing qualifying, it's going to be a busy, busy, busy week locally, so hunker down, folks.
Yes. We'll see y'all next week.
Good night.